It's recording now. So you better be fucking hilarious.
Wow, no pressure, man. Jeez.
None whatsoever. None
yeah,
whatsoever.
We missed your two Dark City references right before you hit record.
So yeah. That's good. Excellent, excellent movie.
I agree. So this is, welcome those listening. If we don't edit this out, this is the inaugural Buddies in Space propcast until come out with a better name.
Featuring the Buddies in Space S. Michael Smith and...
M. Eichel Karasi.
All right.
It's going to kill him the sticks, man. Trust me.
Yeah. I'll trust you on that. So, gosh, whatsoever shall we talk about?
Well...
I'm in a room surrounded by, like, 80s video game memorabilia. That's kind of cool.
I like to think this is one of the nerdiest places on the face of the planet.
Actually, 90s. I take that back.
Yeah, this is 90s. That's 90s. This isn't 80s.
In my world, it would be 80s.
Yeah.
With my...
Why don't you have a man cave?
I have a little office area.
Where?
Just don't ever go to it. That's how cavey it is. It's my own personal cave.
Is it a closet? Is it a closet that you put a chair
it's
in?
It's downstairs. It's downstairs in the basement of our house.
Okay, I've been down in the basement.
It's got a bunch of snake stuff in it, in the room.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not where... The cats don't go into that room.
Because of the snake stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want cats getting into to snakes. That's
oh, no,
that's
I thought
bad mojo.
The snakes were a deterrent.
What? No. No, the snakes would be killed by the cats.
Okay.
I have, I think, two snakes that would probably put up a good fight against cats.
Out of how many?
I don't know, like 20-something.
Oh, wow. That's not very good, like, win-loss ratio odds you're giving.
No, it's not a good snake army, I've got to tell you. They're very small. Very harmless unless you're, like, a mouse.
And even
specifically,
then.
Unless you're a mouse. No, if you're a mouse, you're fucked. You're just your food.
Okay, well,
that is what we feed them. We feed them mice.
But do you feed them like live mice?
No.
Or freeze dried mice or whatever.
They're frozen mice that we thaw, and you thaw them out before. No. I've had somebody say, "Oh, my snake doesn't seem to want to eat anything." Like, are you thawing out the mice or the rats? And he's like, "Well, a little bit." Dude, you gotta get those up to, you know, room temperature at least.
You have strange conversations with people you meet once and sell a snake to, don't you?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's a little strange. But have you ever pitted one of your snakes against a live mouse?
No.
So how do you know?
Oh God, we have, but it's horrible. No, I don't wanna talk about that.
Well, give the highlights.
Oh God. This is awful, awful stuff.
Stop listening for the next 15 seconds if
yeah,
you're...
Yeah, so, okay, sometimes when you have baby snakes, they don't always get the whole eating thing, so it's hard to get them started on eating, which, you got some leeway, because they can go for, like, a month or two without eating anything. They still got, like, all the yolk from the egg that they grew up with, and that's... They can live off that for a good long while.
If you're just coming back, you should still not listen because Mike hasn't gotten to the gory stuff yet.
Okay, so
other than that,
snakes
are filled with it.
We had a few snakes that were like still not eating anything of their own volition. So one of the multiple methods that you can use for getting a snake to eat something is to get something that's actually alive.
Okay.
And, I mean, maybe it smells better. Maybe it's just like the wiggling around in the right way. I don't know.
The wiggle and the jiggle?
So yeah, at one point, yeah, we had some snakes that were being finicky eaters, so we got some live baby mice.
If you're just tuning back in, Mike is finally getting to the gory part, so please go away again. Thanks. Okay.
It's really not even gory, it's just awful.
You built it up so much.
No, it was truly unpleasant. Because they're baby mice.
Right.
Like, tiny, like, not even with their eyes open, baby mice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see where this is going.
It's just like little, you put the little pathetic thing in there with the snake, and it's just like, you can't see me, but I'm kind of wiggling my arms helplessly as if they were little stumps, which is what the baby mice are like. They call them pinkies. Pinky mice.
Okay.
That's the industry term for them. They're pinkies.
Feed them some pinkies.
Yeah.
Wow.
You got some pinkies, you got your fuzzies, you got hoppers. These were pinkies.
These sound like drug names.
Yeah, I could see that.
Huh, okay.
Long story short, the finicky snakes still didn't really want to eat them. So we just ended up putting them in with the more ready to eat sort of snakes, and they had no trouble devouring the helpless little baby mice.
Pinkies.
Yeah, pinkies. They wow. They kind of made a sound.
Oh God!
It was awful. It was what you would imagine the sound to be, yeah. Like a little tiny high pitch.
No, it's okay. Yep, that's exactly what I imagined. Thanks.
Snakes got to eat, man. Snakes got
to
eat.
Yeah, dude. No doubt about it. I think we can all relate to that. All
right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a man nook.
Yeah, it's a room in the basement. A nook, a room, I don't know. It could be a bedroom, I guess, if you wanted it to be.
Oh, well, that changes things a bit.
It has a sink in it. I don't know why.
Well, I
don't know why
they put a sink down there. I know it's easy to get this confused. When I said man cave, I didn't say kill room. I'm not sure if...
You need a sink in a kill room?
Yeah.
It's just a sink, though, man. I mean, it's not like a tub. It's just a sink. I mean, it's like barely enough room to wash your hands.
Yeah, but that's all I would want to do. I mean, if I was like, you know, I need a kill room in my home, I'm not going to be putting whole things in the tub. I just want to wash my hands. I'm a gentleman.
There's also carpet in the room.
Carbon?
Carpet.
Oh, okay.
Carbon?
Yeah, I was confused.
There's probably some carbon bits in there somewhere. I don't know, but there is carpet on the floor, which is not carbon.
So we've determined you don't have a very good kill room.
I do not. I do not.
Have you ever peed in the sink?
No.
But you can nod yes because they can't see.
I have not. I have not peed in that sink.
He's totally nodding right
there
now.
There is a bathroom downstairs. It's not in the same room. It's not attached to the room, but I mean, it's still on the same level, so it's not a big deal to go to the actual bathroom.
Yeah, but like Vietnamese people die from not going to the bathroom while gaming, so you know, for some people, it is a big deal.
Gosh, is that something that just happened, or was that?
No, I think it happened like twice in a short period of time, a couple years ago.
And Vietnamese or Korean?
Oh,
because that sounds like a Korean StarCraft thing to me.
Oh, you know what? You're right. I've been watching a lot of Vietnamese movies.
About
nothing Korean to do StarCraft with this conversation. Okay. No. Are there movies about Korean StarCraft players?
I would just about guarantee it. No, I have no doubt whatsoever that there are, because it's a fucking sport for them.
Yeah, that's true.
And there are they have like celebrity StarCraft athletes. I don't know. That's
tiny body, huge index finger.
They can, I guess, click like nobody's business.
The macro suggests mighty.
I don't know. Is that like steroids for them, using macros?
I think...
Is that... Because that seems like that would be, you know, on that same level.
I guess, yeah. Maybe that's cheating. It's like, you know, no, you can't do that. You're doing three things with one button press. How dare you?
Yeah.
Like, I'm all natural. So maybe there's like a division within their... The StarCraft... Korean. We landed on Korean, right?
It's Korean. Korean. South Korean.
So why didn't you catch on in Vietnam then?
Well, I don't know.
You're apparently, you know, StarCraft
No, I'm not.
Scholar.
I just know that the South Koreans love this thing. Huh. Obviously didn't catch on in North Korea because they don't have anything. And that's an easy answer to that question if that comes up.
You know... That's a valid point.
You have to have what? Electricity. We'll start with that.
Mm-hmm. Internet.
Yep. Yeah.
Computers. That aren't being used from the 1950s to launch missiles.
Yeah. Yeah. Enough food so that you can move your fingers, I guess.
Generate the caloric requirements for finger movement. Yeah. Oh, you know they're not using macros in North Korea.
No, they can't afford macros.
They can't afford them. They can't afford to eat enough food to use them.
Oh my God!
Wow, are we horrible for saying this? Are we?
No, this is like dead on accurate. Why?
Oh, okay.
Why
are we... So you are a StarCraft scholar. I knew
it. I'm not. No, This is all, you can all look this up on the internet right now.
Like, can't you put my computer to sleep?
I'm talking to the people that are listening. I'm not talking to you.
Oh, okay. If you're watching this, it's probably on, like, Facebook or YouTube or something. So go ahead. Look it up. I promise.
We'll wait. No, we won't.
No, we won't wait.
Yeah. You know where the pause button is for this. If you're still listening.
Yeah, it's right here. Right? It's right there. I'm totally pointing to it right now, right? Yes. Come on, people at home. You know
yeah. I'm right. Get away from that mic. Stay away from that pause
button. What if I push the pause?
No! Yeah, I told you not to do that.
That was pretty good.
All right, so what else we got?
Well, this is exciting. So we've been talking about doing this for a while.
Yes.
We can acknowledge.
People don't want to hear us talking about doing this.
Well, you could. All podcasters talk about podcasting.
Yeah, but it sucks.
Wow.
It sucks the life out of the podcast.
Did you listen to any of the Nerdists like I asked you to?
No.
Yeah. They do it with panache.
Well, okay. I'm opposed to that.
Well,
I think that's like a writer writing about being a writer.
Oh, like Stephen King? Dark Tower!
Is that what that's about?
Only in the last... So, Stephen King...
Are we spoiling Dark Tower right now?
No, I was gonna... No, I'm gonna talk about
this. Because you can. I don't fucking care.
Dude, it's a really good book series, except for the 5th, 6th, and 7th books, which if you let me finish, I'll explain exactly why.
Alright.
So, he wrote books 1 through 4... over the course of, like, 20 years. Right. Between all his other stuff. And they're all amazing. Like, just universally phenomenal books. And they tie in, like, half of his other books. And they're awesome. And they're, like, part fantasy, part horror. And it's phenomenal. And, like, people wrote him from death row being like, I'm getting killed. I'm, like, being murdered. Or not being murdered. But he put to death because I murdered
people. You're being murdered by the state.
Yeah.
I think that's...
For murdering other people.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a justifiable murdering. But
not that kind of podcast. Yeah, you're right. But not that's a different
podcast. It's a scheduled murder.
Right. Which makes the state a serial killer?
It kind of does, Mike. It kind of does. Yes.
Well,
so yeah, Death Row.
So people were writing from Death Row multiple times, I guess. And they were like, we're going to be, you know, put to death next week. Can you just tell me how this ends? And he'd be like, he'd write back to him, like, I don't know how it ends. I don't write it. It writes itself.
And then they write back, I'm going to kill you.
Like, just kidding. Toodles. So he wrote the first four books and they were really, really good. And I luckily came into it. Like, after the first four books had been written, at least. So I was able to read a big chunk at once. Sorry, I prefer to read big book series.
Yeah.
And then he got
it's
hit
like
by
watching that. A watching a TV series.
Well, except
best
for
best way to do it is, well, that's debatable.
Well, we can get into that.
Yeah, we probably
I
will.
Think I had a better experience watching Battlestar as it was airing than you did watching all at once, because the flaws were not as immediately apparent.
All right. We'll get to that. But finish your... I'll let you finish your Stephen King
Dark
Tower.
It's saga.
Saga. As I drink some water.
So I gotta talk really quick, because my drink's really slow. So he got hit by that minivan, you remember? Which he wrote into the book, by the way. And he got hit by the minivan, and like he became aware of his own mortality. And so rather than waiting for the books to just kind of happen organically, he rushed them, and he wrote like the last three books in like 3 years. And like the quality significantly... isn't as good. I still think they're great books, and the ending is extremely polarizing. Extremely. I thought it was brilliant, but people disagree. That's my story.
I'm not going to disagree, because I haven't read them. But to my original point, I think it's cheap and cheesy and so incredibly overdone when a writer writes about being a writer, or, you know, movie... actor or writer, you know, it's a self-referential stuff,
right?
That like everybody who's like writes a play or writes a book seems to go through that phase, and mm-hmm. That's okay. Get it out of the system, and then don't do it again.
And then do your really good stuff.
Then do your good stuff. Yeah,
there are a lot of Hollywood movies about Hollywood movies.
Yeah, and they're not all good.
No, The Player's good.
The Player is good. Did you actually end up seeing it, or you? Just...
I had seen it years ago.
Oh, okay.
But I know you show me the scene. It's an extremely long take.
It's a brilliant take. It's
yeah, I agree.
It's the beginning of The Player. Fred Ward was in that.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
sure.
Tons of cameos, but I think Fred Ward was one of the main guys in that
that sequence.
Sequence, yeah. So yeah, go Fred Ward.
Yeah, he was in Tremors, right?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
I like Tremors.
Tremors is awesome. He was in that. He was
in The Road Trip.
I haven't seen that. Was that horrible? It sounds awful.
It was very funny when I was in college. I'm going to leave it there.
All right.
In college.
And he was that spy movie where he was...
Spies Like Us?
Remo Williams.
Oh, The Adventures of Remo Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie was awesome. It had the Quaker Oats guy in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And had
and Kate Mulgrew as the love interest.
And and the most sexist old Asian guy on the face of the planet.
Also racist because he was not actually Asian.
Yes, which Hollywood does a lot. But he had this amazing
that
line.
That was a big deal for that.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Like, big bad deal?
Yeah, it was. They got like a lot of negative press.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that movie did very well. But, I mean, I'm sure the line didn't help when he said, "Women should stay in the kitchen making babies!" But with like a fake Asian accent.
That's like just the racist icing on the cake. Icing on the sexist cake.
Sexist icing on the racist cake.
Oh, man. Which is worse?
It's an inside-out cake.
I don't know. Yeah.
The ricing's on the inside.
Oh my god.
That was a wonderful unintentional misspeaking.
Horrible, horrible.
What I was trying to say before when you got down on self-referentialism with podcasts was I was going to say your original idea for this had been a board gaming one.
Yeah.
So maybe someday we'll do that.
Hell yeah, board games. What? Oh, we're not going to talk about board games now?
Well, we do it almost every improv show. So. To the point where I think we got some complaints.
About board games?
About me bringing up board games.
That was probably for me.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it was you. I can't keep track of all the people.
It was more the demons that you sort of leapt to from board games. Hey, yeah, I mean, we like playing board games, which brings me to demons.
I tied it together a little better than that.
How many
board games do we play that involve killing demons?
I don't know.
Fair amount.
A few.
Fair amount. Okay. More than most people.
Okay, so there's Ghost Story.
Touch of Evil. That one we just beat, finally.
The
big one with the D&D world.
The D&D world.
Well, two of them.
Two of them.
What's the one with the taints? Where you're trying to... You got a bag of taints. What's that one?
Yeah, the taint crystals.
The taint crystals.
Defenders of the Realm.
Defenders of the Realm with all the taints.
Yeah.
And then what's the other one we played for months? Descent. Yeah. All demons.
Yeah. And arguably, Arkham Horror could be... It's pretty close to demons. It's certainly got portals.
Yeah.
Holy crap, it's got portals.
Portals are just like... It's like got more portals than the game Portal. But,
Witch of Salem also had portals. Okay, so...
Does that hurt?
Does that hurt your brain a little bit?
And be like, oh...
Yeah, okay. It does seem that we do have a lot of...
Demonic fighting-themed portal...
Yeah.
...riddled games.
All right. But we had actually made a pact prior to this show. Like, immediately prior to that show.
No, it was after that show.
No, it was before that show.
Oh.
It was after our practice where we brought up a demonic portal to hell... For the billionth time, we're like, no, we're not going to do this ever again.
I say thee nay.
The portals are done. We bring them up so often.
Specifically, the portals to hell are done.
Well, yeah.
And we managed
It was
to
specifically
it.
Portals to hell.
And we managed
no
to open
more
that
portals
show
to hell.
With an entire sequence about portals to hell.
Yeah,
but
which was hilarious.
It was tongue-in-cheek.
It was very funny. I enjoyed it, actually.
I did. I almost got hurt.
I had a good time doing that. And I didn't even realize it until, like, afterwards. Like, oh my god, we just did exactly what we said we were going to do.
That's the thing, is, like, I feel like people who maybe aren't as familiar with improv assume there's some degree of scriptedness to it.
Yeah, we said we're going to script not doing this.
That's how bad we are at scripting things. We can't even unscript something. In fact, the act of unscripting almost guarantees it will pop up in the show. Front and center, first thing.
At least we haven't done hipsters in the show yet. Oh, well, since we decided not to do hipsters anymore.
Should we discuss HIP positive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have a
Is that an awful term? I don't know. That might be...
Well, I would have said yes, except True Blood just did an entire thing. Their new thing is Hep V.
Hep V?
Hep V. So I feel like we can kind of... That's not... Normally something you joke about.
Okay.
So, yes. So, we have a code name.
Yeah, not anymore. We don't. It's HIP positive for people who are overboard with the hipsterisms, mm-hmm. hipstertude, hips.
I like hips. Yeah, hipstertude.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
They're taking the hipsterness too far.
I thought you were going to jump in. So this came about because we both like making fun of hipsters. We both live downstate. I lived in Williamsburg. I had an iPod filled with songs I didn't like because I was deathly afraid of an iPod check.
That's really a thing.
Okay, so I was thinking about this, and I've told people this.
Yeah, you've told me this before, and I still don't believe it's a
real
thing.
No, it is a real thing. I've claimed that it has happened to me. I think it's one of those things that, you know, you tell a story, like, oh, there's this thing, like, people check each other's iPods. Like,
yeah.
I think I just made up the memory that it happened to me. I'm not actually sure it ever...
Did it happen to you in a dream, Mike?
No, I think I literally just told that anecdote so many times, and I have a tendency of embellishing. I've admitted this on tape now. I embellish things.
What? Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, you dealt with me being right about the demon portals, so...
So this the iPod check never happened, or did it happen to someone?
Not
else?
To me. I think I read about it. Or
are you embellishing right now?
No, I'm.
You
actually,
read about it.
I read about it.
You either read it about from it or some guy.
No, it was like in Rolling Stone.
Somebody told you about it.
You're not gonna put words in my mouth, Mike.
I'm trying to pull words out somehow.
Okay, this is getting weird. So, both Mike and I have a particular enjoyment of mocking hipster subculture or culture at this point. I don't. I can't even.
Yeah. We do that while knowing very all too well that we skate along the edge of it ourselves.
Of committing hipsterisms by yeah. trying to mock hipstertude. Yes, and the fact that we've come up with cute little names for it doesn't help. Regardless, no. What we've discovered as a improv comedic duo is that trying to do an accurate portrayal of a hipster in a scene utterly and completely kills the scene.
Yeah, it's terrible, bad for business, not funny.
Not funny, not fun.
No. It's because the way we portray hipsters, and maybe this is our fault for not... Well, okay. Sure. If you want to say that, I wasn't going to.
Oh, I went there.
All right, you went there. And accurate in the sense that, according to Mike...
Look, you're distancing yourself.
I don't want to piss off the hipsters, Mike, because I think they're a key crowd for us. I think they're a part of our audience, and I don't want to go too far.
Well, not those hipsters. Those hipsters are not having fun.
Okay.
We're talking about
our hipsters are cool.
Yes, clearly.
Those other hipsters, forget it.
Our hipsters were being hipsters before it got unfun.
Wow.
Yep.
Untangle that.
You cut right through with a portal to hell. Anyway.
Yeah, because the way that we were portraying hipsters with it, they only care about not caring. I don't know. It's hard to put into words.
It's like navel gazing nihilism.
Yeah.
And
like they can't ever be impressed by anything.
Right, but like improv is so dependent on things like yes-anding and building on accepting.
Reacting to each other.
In an emotional way.
Yeah. And you know, playing people who are like, oh yeah, that's nice, I knew about that.
10 years ago.
That kind of, there's no energy in that. No. It sucks the life out of everything.
It just slowly circles the drain, yeah. So,
and it sucks life out of you when you talk to these people.
It's true. And I think that I understand how, like, you think, oh, why would anyone want to be hipster? But even just playing it as a joke in a scene, like, I see it's like the dark side, man. It just kind of draws you in. It's like, wow, this is really, like, I could be miserable all the time. And I could completely control my own misery.
Yes, you're captain of your own miserable destiny.
Your own misery ship.
Yes.
Adrift in the sea of emo.
By choice.
By choice.
By choice.
And you were doing it before it was cool.
That's right. You were the first ship in this sucky Bermuda triangle of...
I'm sorry, triangle?
Triangle.
I'm pretty triangle. Sure triangle.
Okay.
It sounds like a new chip.
The Bermuda triangle.
The maker of Pringles. It's Tringles. They're Pringles, but triangular.
I can see that.
Union's gonna have like a triangular can.
Yeah.
Oh, they should put like like the 3-point captain's hat.
Why?
The triangular hat, you know, that captains used to wear, ship captains.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be. It could be like a whole, like the mascot could be a ship thing.
They just take the Pringles guy and put that hat on him.
Right, and then that is the top of the triangular can that it comes in.
Okay.
It's a marketing thing, Mike. You don't understand marketing.
I can think of like 20 ways why that won't work, but I'm gonna just give it to you. I'm gonna give that one to you, Mike.
Wow. I'm like 2 for 1. Ha ha! So, yeah, so we finally determined that doing a hipster scene was to be referred to as...
And we haven't done that. We haven't done them in the show.
Well, I think the terminology helped.
Yeah.
It's just so horrible to say HIP positive.
Yeah, it's not fun. It's there's just no fun in that for us. No.
So, okay, so let's talk about... We're talking about improv, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a question for you.
Oh. Oh, my God. go ahead. I'm gonna drink my water to mentally prepare myself.
Okay.
We can't both be drinking water at the same time, because then nobody's going to be talking.
I'm not even thirsty. I saw you doing it. I was like, I need to drink
water.
I know.
You know,
it's this damn Meisner acting technique.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
I'm gonna drink my water.
You should just keep talking while you're doing it, too. Joke, and I could be a one-man troupe. Yeah. What is your favorite, I've been very honest about my particular type of favorite scene to do.
So you say.
So I say. We haven't done one in forever, though. But what is your favorite improv scenario?
My favorite improv scenario?
And I don't mean you have to be super specific,
oh,
but
man.
Like, what is that one scene that you've been like, I would always love to recreate this because I enjoyed it so much and all these things, these elements were there? You take another drink of water.
No. The one scene that like sticks out in my mind was actually a scene I did at the I think it was either the first or second Comedy Fallback Festival.
Okay.
At
the space.
Lazzarello and John Thompson and the space guys and Khalid put together. And I don't remember who I was doing the scene with. It was just like a kind of a thing for the various directors, I guess. So I did one, and Frank Stracci did one, and then I forget who else. Probably Swithin. I don't know. He wasn't there, though, was he? Was he not there?
No, didn't they not show?
I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, it was like just a one-off scene that I did with some guy from. I think he was from North Carolina.
Okay.
You probably weren't here for this.
Yeah, I might not have been.
And I didn't know this guy. I talked to him briefly during the thing, and I forget what the suggestion was, but we just jumped out there and went with it. I had no idea what was going to happen, which is, you know, the way to do it.
Yeah, that's how you should be doing improv.
And we did this such a fun scene where I was this elderly cougar woman at a checking out at a. Like at a grocery store, and he was the guy at the cash register, the cashier. And I was just like kind of casually hitting on him. It doesn't sound that funny, but it was so much fun because we were hitting off all this stuff. I think part of it was that the two of us were able to play together so well without really having any experience playing together to
sure.
begin with.
Everything was new.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I enjoyed that so much, and I keep thinking about that. You know, it's because, hey, two people can just come together and jam in a scene like that and come up with something that's amazing. And I guess, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
I mean, I could go into specifics of the scene, but I don't think that's really what was
No. I think you hit it. It's just funny because I kept being like, if you change the wording slightly, you'd just be talking about casual sex. it's just two people. They don't really know each other. Could just, you know, just not even verbally, just make this agreement that they're just going to, you know, get together for a short period of time and make magic.
I don't know. But yeah, it was something about the whole, the uniqueness of that situation. And I guess it was me going from, I have no idea how this is going to turn out because I don't know this guy, I don't know what to expect, to going, oh, wow, this worked so well, we played so well together.
I'm sorry, the casual sex thing is still running.
Okay.
Nothing, I was waiting for you to say something there. I was listening, I was engaged.
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to say something that would make it so it couldn't possibly be about sex, but it didn't actually happen.
I wish I could remember his name, Mike. I didn't even get a phone number out of it.
Now you're trying too hard. But he was from North Carolina.
I think so.
Cue a wacky romantic comedy.
Yeah, and that's where he was with some people that man, what was her name? Eve Pridman.
Oh, Eve, yeah.
Yeah, I think she ended up going down there and moving down there with them. What? Why is that so funny?
Nothing.
We can take this part out.
No, we're leaving this. This is good. This is gold.
You remember Eve?
Yes, I remember Eve.
Okay.
I'm just laughing at the wording, that's all.
She was great. She's very talented.
Yeah.
Very, very funny person.
That's the funny thing about improv. Yeah, I mean, there's so many people we've worked with that I miss. It's like, improv is like your freshman year of college. Like, you come across so many people, and, like, everyone's just new and whatever, so everyone just kind of comes together for brief periods of time. And,
yeah.
You know, and then you just drift off as time goes on, and then you're like, oh, I haven't seen that person in years, but they were really fun that little time we got to
spend. Yeah, that's happened a lot. And that actually... Oh man, we're getting to honest stuff here. That ended up happening a lot, like right in my like last year with Unleashed.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we had so many good people that were just coming in and then leaving. I mean, for legitimate reasons.
Right.
Not that they were like, oh, I hate you people, I'm leaving. It was, I mean, you know, Mark and Beth went off to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And got married.
And got married. That was before they went off to Chicago.
Yeah. Yes, they left to Chicago. But they're coming back. So hopefully we can perform with them.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. When is that going to happen?
I think Beth's coming back first, and then Mark's coming back later, or the other way around.
Cool.
Yeah, they're coming back in two stages. That's the parole understanding that they have at the City of Chicago.
Yeah. Well, before that, you had left. But then
thanks.
Came back.
Thanks for including that. Smike, I was leaving before it was cool.
That's right. That's right. Oh, God.
But then I came back, because Rochester does bring people back.
Yeah. Is it Rochester bringing you back, or is it New York just spitting you out?
A little column A, a little column B. No, I left New York. I left with my tail between my legs. I've left New York with my tail between my legs twice.
I feel like I should hug you.
No, that's cool. As time heals all wounds that aren't festering, is the addendum I'm adding.
I like to think you guys are happy back here.
I'm super stoked, dude. Have you seen this house?
No.
Okay, so you're in a small room in the basement of a very...
Is this where you've abducted me to a house? Because I thought I was just in a warehouse or something. But it's actually your house.
Yeah.
The basement.
I just took you into the back.
You're soundproofed.
My soundproofed.
I assume.
Yeah. Oh, there's a large sink.
Because I screamed for a while and nobody did anything.
No, there's a large sink around the corner. Go back to our previous discussion.
All right.
It's a large sink.
I get it.
Well, you to drain a body of blood, you could conceivably fit the whole body in the sink.
Okay, and we got dark there.
Us, really? We went way off topic.
Yeah. Maybe we can edit that out.
No, I want everything in.
What? Why do you want this stuff in?
It's entertaining. Just leave some pauses and then we can always edit if we want.
All right.
And if not, the audience is like, oh my God. This is the stuff that was going to end up on the cutting room floor. We're getting to hear it. I'm so excited. It's like bonus features that were never actually removed to become bonus features.
We could talk about stuff that we actually didn't say yet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when you were talking about the dog, boy, we are definitely cutting that out.
Oh, man, yeah.
And all that stuff about the babies that you were taking care of.
What am I going to do with this leg? This leg, I don't want to. Will you take the leg back?
No.
Come on.
No.
Please?
I get in so much trouble if I take this back.
It's not an Indian giver. It belonged to an Indian person. But
All right.
It's kind of funny. It's ironic.
East Indian.
Yeah. Still Indian.
Yeah, but you can't say that. It's still a racist thing to say.
Everything's racist.
All right.
No, seriously. I think everything is racist.
Oh, are we getting serious now?
I don't know. Scene?
We're scene.
Yes, I think everything is racist.
Okay.
Like being a trainer, being a corporate trainer, I try, me, who tends to curse at the drop of a hat. Actually, I tend to curse at the drop of a hat, but I'm matured a little bit, and so in my corporate persona, I do try to maintain a modicum of professionalism.
Dignity?
No, I have no dignity.
No?
Nah, none. But professionalism, I strive for.
What do you mean you have no dignity? No, I'm curious about this. You're not afraid of looking like a fool? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Because you take pride in what you do, I mean, clearly.
I look like a fool well.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
I feel like if you do improv, you have to lower a certain degree of, and I think that held me back for the longest time.
What? No, like, keep, finish that first thought.
I think if you're going to do, like, improv well, and you're going to, because we have a very open format. And
yeah.
We're very open with the audience.
Yes.
So I don't think you can have, like, I equate dignity with having, like, it's not quite ego, but it's that, like, you have that perception of yourself, and you're trying to maintain a certain persona.
Yes.
That has dignity.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense? So I feel like you have to check that at the door if you're going to do improv. I think our format in particular, you kind of have to say, well, like, because we have our fake combative thing, which is really just our friendship in general, but we ramp it up a
sure,
bit.
Sure,
the show.
Sure it is.
Yeah, sure. I hate you. was that under my breath? What? Exactly. So
that was the sound of me glaring at Mike.
Yeah, I'm sure they heard it.
I'm sure they felt it.
Just sheer anger and, yeah. Okay, stop glaring at me. I can't talk while you're glaring at me.
All right, I'm gonna take it down a notch.
Okay, I can breathe.
All right.
It's still slightly disconcerting.
You're lucky.
I know. I've seen you blow up people's heads with
the... No, the brains.
But just the brains.
The heads don't really explode. It's just the brains.
No? Okay, I was lying. I've only heard about it. I read it. But I've told the story so many times that I imagine I've seen it.
Yeah, skulls are hard, man.
Like
brains
hard,
are soft
hard?
And squishy.
Are they meant like they're hard to deal with, man?
Well, yeah.
Skulls.
Both.
So I think you need to check your dignity at the door to do improv in general. And I, for the longest
yes.
time, I think crutches sometimes come out of like something's worked or you have a certain idea of what works, and so you just keep going to that well.
Yes.
And so I feel like that you're trying to hang on to your dignity as a performer, and
yes.
that like I am striving to hit a mark. But you have to put that aside and be like, I'm just going to roll with it. And if I end up on all fours as a half chihuahua, half fucking, you know, Sherman tank, and it works in the scene, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to look ridiculous doing it. So that's why I say I have no dignity.
Yeah. What sinks you in improv is when you become conscious of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to look like a fool and, oh, crap, now I'm looking like a fool. When you hit that thought of, oh, crap, now I'm looking stupid, you're just screwed.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going out like, yeah, I'm going to look stupid.
So or, what?
You know, yeah, it's if you commit to it, this must sound so cheesy and over I don't know.
Stale.
Overanalyzed or stale or something. It's
I like to think that
overstated.
I like to think that the people listening either can relate because they are improvisers or they don't have a lot of insight in improv and maybe don't understand the back end of it. We don't get into that in our show a lot.
Yeah, but when you if you're really committing to whatever you're doing, you're
in improv. Okay.
You're going to be in good shape.
Yeah.
It's when you come to that moment of doubt, like, oh, God, this is so stupid. Then yeah, that's when you're sunk.
Mm-hmm. And that's why having
that's
fun.
That's one of the times you can be
that's
sunk.
One
of the many, many times.
Several of them is playing a hipster. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hard for us because we're both very mental players.
Super in our heads.
Yeah.
Super. But when
Which
we,
is, it's dangerous.
It is. But with us working together for so long, I feel like it's kind of... It's organically evolved to the point where we found a way to make that work so we get out of our heads.
Yeah, we kind of open up our heads.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's why our format's kind of odd for improv is we're just very like, this is us. This is, oh, I have an idea for a scene. Let's jump into this and be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Without setting out to be ridiculous. It's like alchemy. Yeah. You know the little adage about alchemy?
I do not.
Oh, I thought everyone knew you.
I'm not.
You don't know the old adage? But, oh, it's really interesting.
I do not.
Oh, well, I don't know if
you've
ever done
alchemy.
I guess
you're more hip to that than I am, Mike.
Whoa, don't. Careful. I will slap you. And they'll hear it. Because you have a bald head. And good, you know. Like, adhesion of skin molecules.
You don't want to do
act
that.
Of slapping. I don't.
Yeah, get my head's kind of greasy.
Yeah, I can see the light bouncing off it in my kill room. I mean, man cave. the old adage about alchemy is
yes.
You need to do the incantations and mix the ingredients all while not thinking about an elephant. And the minute the person says that to you, you can never do alchemy. because you instantly create the synaptic connection of alchemy and not thinking about an elephant.
I'd never heard that.
You really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a real thing. It's like a one of those catch 22.
I understand.
Do you?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, but it's like that. And I mean we both seen players who are and this is a gift that some improv players we've seen have. They can just talk and not think about what they're talking about.
Yeah, they just cut out the front of their brain.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And it is amazing. I mean, they'll say some weird, weird stuff, but
it somehow works.
It works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, it's great to play with those people. They're just like a fountain of
gifts.
Of gifts coming mm-hmm. up.
Yeah, they're just always giving.
Yeah.
As long as, I mean, you can be like that, but not actually listen well or whatever. So you need to have that well-roundedness, but... Yeah, it's cool. And then there are people who...
So we can get into that zone on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a little more. I don't know. Work, is that the right word?
Anti-work. Yeah. Well, I say that because when I was in New York, the mm-hmm. one really fruitful period I had where I was getting lots of really great instruction, I was working with this woman, Rita Gardner. She was the grandmother, and I'm saying this more for the audience's benefit, I know you know this. She was the grandmother and the wedding singer on Broadway. She was in a bunch of movies. She studied with Uta Hagen. Uta Hagen taught her to teach. She was phenomenal. And we worked out a deal where I was doing like website stuff for her, so I got this like free once a week private acting coaching. Mm-hmm. And I am so in my head all the time. That like we spent a lot of the time with her trying to figure out how to get me out of my head, and it was really cool because the few times that we really succeeded, like I was doing the best acting ever just for her. Unfortunately, no one else really got to see it, and I parlayed that into one act play, and I think it may have been the best acting I've ever done. And like my wife saw it, and like one or two friends saw it, and that
yeah.
was it. Yeah,
it's got a video of it.
No,
what was it?
It was...
like something nobody had ever heard of, right?
It wasn't even... It was something that was written for the one act. It was something some guy I read years ago, the writer, director. It was based on the painting Nighthawks. You know, where they're sitting in the diner at night?
Oh.
You know the painting. Everyone knows
okay. It. Yeah. I didn't know it was called Nighthawks.
It's called Nighthawks.
I assume that... I associate that with that Sylvester Stallone film.
Hudson Hawk?
No, Nighthawk.
Right. Oh, I'm thinking Bruce Willis did Hudson Hawk.
Yeah, that's something else.
The weird musical. Yeah, I didn't see that Sylvester Stallone movie.
Good film.
Yeah? Was it?
Yeah.
80s movie, good film?
Yeah.
All right. Have you watched it recently?
No.
Okay.
Okay, it might not hold up very well.
No, it could be a great film in your memory. I may not seek it out. Just don't take that the wrong way.
I understand.
Yeah, it was based on that, and I was like this douchey husband, and I don't know, my wife kills herself at the end of it. But like, I was really douchey. I was just a bastard, and so I got to just go all out. Well, I try to be so nice most of the time that it's like.
But you for you that was a great moment.
Yeah, when I was the douchiest I've ever been in my life, Mike, it was the greatest moment ever. Yeah, so that's the whole anti-work thing. It's like, it's tremendous. For some people, like for myself, and probably for you, maybe not, maybe you have, I think, more acting training than I do, but getting out of your head is the hardest part and takes the most work.
Yeah.
Which is antithetical to the act of acting.
Yes. It's like you said, one of those things where you're like, when you realize, oh, I'm in my head, fuck.
You thought of the elephant.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, like, the magic is gone.
Yeah.
You know, which is why I got into improv, because that helped me deal with that. Up to a point, I was leaps and bounds better just because I was able to say, all right, well, I can get out of my head by just not thinking about what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And just going with it and then accepting everything that comes my way.
So here's a question.
Ooh.
I'll put a question to you.
I'm going to take a sip of my water.
All right. This is... Okay. All right. There we go. So... Is it possible, in your experience, to think your way out of a bad scene?
Yes.
Yeah?
It's not going to be pretty. I feel I have done that on occasion. So yes.
So, okay, that's the extent of your answer. I guess I was trying to open up more of a discussion on that. Because I don't know that I can... not in any satisfactory way.
Well, okay, so you feel dirty afterwards.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But when I think the way I'm trying to be vague on purpose.
Yeah.
In those situations, so as to not hurt anyone's feelings or to... I'm not talking about you.
You can. I mean, we've done those scenes.
We've done some stinkers, yeah.
This is a bad scene we're in.
Yeah.
And we kind of get that look like, we got to figure out a way to get out of this. And that never seems to work.
I'm not saying it works all the time. All I'm saying is there are those times when you say, okay, either we could just let the scene die, we could keep it going and kill the audience, or I could just predetermine like three steps to the scene that'll end it in a quasi-satisfactory state. And then it's like, it's a cost-benefit analysis thing. It's like, okay, is the shit feeling I'm going to have at the end of this scene going to be better because I got it over with and cheated my way out by thinking it through? Or am I going to feel worse about it because of that, you know? And when I decide, like, wow, this is so horrible to be in that I need to actively script my way out, I'm going to do it, you know?
So at that point, you're not looking to turn the scene around to make it a good scene.
When I was younger, I used to. I know better now. I feel like usually within like 20 seconds of the scene, I have a pretty good idea, like, all right, this, we're grooving, or we're not hitting the mark, you know, just in general, just whoever we are. I kind of have that impression. And I honestly think that's a sign of a less experienced improviser. Someone who's like, rather than focusing on getting there right away, they're like fighting to get there, and it prolongs it. Whatever there is, you know, the game, the platform, the relationship, the situation. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe we're approaching it the wrong way. And maybe it's that we're looking for a way to turn to get out of this. Maybe we should just be, what am I doing wrong? Why don't I try to have fun in this?
I think that's a very fine idea, but when you're in the middle of it, it's a hell of a lot harder to think like that.
I agree. You know?
But when you're 2 minutes in, you know, there's no laughs, and you're like, you start to get that I'm in my own head thing. That really becomes an issue.
Well, that's the thing, because you're always a little bit, you're always in tune with the audience to an extent. You're always like, I'm not hearing any laughs out of the audience in this. And then, like, later on, maybe somebody will say, oh no, people were just riveted. I don't know if I ever have bought that.
It's like, oh, you got shit on by a bird. No, it's good luck. Man, no, you just ruined so many shows for me now.
I don't know. Maybe it's true, but when I'm not hearing something, it makes me all itchy.
Itchy? Is that what you were scratching in the end of the shows?
Mentally itchy.
Mentally itchy.
Yeah.
So, okay, so let's follow this, because now we're in improv deep. We're calling it a provcast, so I guess that's fair. If you tuned in for more nerdy conversation, maybe next time.
Well, we can divide this into two podcasts.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. And we're going to cut it right. The exchange of energy between the performer and the audience. I mean, you felt this. I know we've talked about this. Like, improv, like, a bad audience is fucking exhausting.
Yes.
And it's weird, like, because it's so hard to explain that to someone, even to someone in the audience.
Yeah, but you never, I mean, I never, and I think we never, for the most part, certainly not while we're on stage, want to blame the audience.
No, I'm not going there.
I just wanted to, like, you know, touch on that for a second.
That's like the word, like the
stand-up. And some people do.
Oh, yeah.
Especially stand-ups.
Stand-up meltdown, like, what the fuck is with you people? This is funny. Yeah. I know you're out there. I can hear you breathing.
Yeah. That has never, ever worked to get you just back in the good graces of the audience.
No, you've lost them at that point. And that's the great thing about our format in particular, that we can magic that away pretty easily. Not that we ever get to that point. No, but I just mean the exchange of... I was joking with a coworker today, and he was like, oh, well, what if you hit it big, and what would it be like? And I was like, well, with our format, we couldn't, because we need a certain size audience or less, because we try to be very, like, intimate with them. And he's like, well, you could just do 5 shows a night. And I was like, do you know how awful that sounds?
Yeah. I mean, getting intimate with five audiences
a night. Man, screw you. But you know what I mean.
What?
Oh, do you, were you not joking?
Oh.
What? You know what I mean by intimate. I have so many weapons in this room.
There's a joke in there.
Yeah, well, there's many jokes. That. the audience has chased it.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, the thought of doing, like, even back-to-back improv shows, it's like, I'd have to prepare myself for that. Like, I couldn't do that after work.
Yeah.
Because I give so much, and the audience takes so, and it's awesome. And they give, too. But I feel like I'm being really, like, touchy-feely, hippie-ish. It's so hard to explain.
There's a difference. I mean, it's harder to do an improv. It's harder to do back-to-back improv shows than it is to do back-to-back scripted shows.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Sure.
Because you're in the scripted show, I mean, you know what's going to happen. You know what you got to put out there. I mean, the audience is always different for scripted shows, too. Mm-hmm. And so there's always, you know.
And scripted shows should always be slightly different.
Yeah, but. And they are. I mean, every they all feel different. But, I mean, at least you're like, okay, I know what I have to do.
I have to bring
you can right mentally here. Prepare for it. You're not just coming up with everything the whole time. I mean, I guess that's a truism, but
right.
but yeah, it's and one time when I was doing it was the big stinking, let's see if I remember the name, the big stinking International Improv Festival in Austin, Texas, and I think this was the second year we were there. I was there with a college troupe. This wasn't the college troupe. I don't know. I think it was with the group I was with from Nashville.
You're so old. All of your old troops are melding together.
That was the Electric Pickle Players.
Oh yeah, and didn't you just electrocute it, or you made a pickle battery or something every?
Yeah, at the end of all of our shows, we would electrocute a number of pickles.
And then give them to the audience to eat?
No. It looked really cool because we turned out all the lights and we'd run the electrical current through, like, I think I got a rig set up where I could do like five or so of them at once at least. And that was pretty freaking cool. And they would all light up and make this like crackling sound.
Did you ever refer to it as your five pickle rig?
I did not.
You should have.
I probably should have.
That's a great
band. But it was cool. And this was like probably the pinnacle of that group when we were performing at the BSIIF in Austin, Texas. It must have been, I'm going to say, 99?
Okay, it was a good long time ago.
Yeah. And we did a pretty long set for a festival. It was like an hour and a half or something.
Oh, wow.
That's long for a festival.
Yeah. Yeah, usually they play on the half show.
We got off stage, and then somebody comes up to right like immediately after us. You guys got to come over to the other venue. There were like three different venues for this thing. Like, you guys are booked for this other venue right now.
I had no idea.
What? Yeah. Well, of course not. We didn't double book ourselves. I mean, this is their own screw up. But you're like, okay. And so we went and we did the second. The second show, and it was like the first like 10 minutes we were like, oh my god, this is not gonna work. We were just so, you know, we burned out because we put all like everything into that
the first
show.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we got to a point where we pushed through it and we were like, screw it, we don't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a good moment, and the show seemed to pick up quite a bit for the pickle players. I guess that was a long way to get to saying that when you get to a point as an improv player where you can go out on stage and like just screw it, I don't care, I'm just gonna do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad place to be.
No, that's where all the training and the practice comes in, because you can rely on everything you've done already to just take over. And
But we usually don't get to that point.
No, I don't think our format lends itself to that as much.
No.
Because we break it up with the talking and the exploration. And that's, I mean, that's something we've sacrificed, I guess, with doing the way we do our shows.
Don't know where else I was going with that.
Well, now I just feel like crap.
What? But no, that's a good point that you have, that we do sacrifice certain things. Like, we're not going to do anything that has, like, a long story. No, I mean, we could, but...
Yeah. We could, but it becomes a little bit more like you're pre-scripting things. Almost. It's like, how do we get the monologue we just did into leading to this recurrence? I mean, you can discover it.
Yeah. But it's like, it kind of is like Penny Arcade. Okay. The comic.
The most popular webcomic ever.
It's up there.
They also invented, like, the webcomic genre. They're the first ones to monetize it.
Okay.
Extremely successfully.
Yeah. But they, the tie-in is that they made a conscious decision when they started doing the comic strip to not have continuity.
Right.
I mean, that was a very strong choice they made. Like, we're not going to have a continuous storyline at all. Every strip is going to be its own individual thing. I mean, every once in a while, yeah.
I was going to say, they've not done that on occasion. Well, do you know the whole thing with the watch for the first couple of years?
Yes.
I really got a kick. So one of them had the Pac-Man watch for the audience.
Yeah, they kept track of which character...
Well, they'd always kill, one of them would kill the other one and steal the watch. Yeah. So then they'd both be alive. Yeah, so that watch changed hands so many times.
But I think they kept track of it. They did.
Oh, yeah. No, I went back and read them all like a couple years after they started. And like you could clearly see the watch was changing hands correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had the zombie roommate.
Yeah.
That had Tycho's sweater.
Yeah.
Oh, kind of random.
I told you that... In a sense, we're kind of... I don't mean this in like a self-aggrandizing way or whatever, but there's a little bit of a similarity between our structure, the current structure we have, and then Penny Arcade.
Okay.
Because they do the comic, it's like a standalone thing, and at the same time they've got the long, you know, explanation behind the comic.
Yeah, their story section is like way denser than their actual strip.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to read it and even know what the strip's about.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, that's exactly what we do, but it's there's similarities.
I get it. I understand. I would tell you having met Tycho and Gabe several times at conventions. Like, you remind me of Tycho. Mostly because of the baldness and the glasses. And you have that, like, if you don't know you, like, if a person doesn't know you, I think you're a little bit more awkward seeming than you really are.
I really don't know how to take that.
I know, I'm trying not to be insulting, but...
Well, I think I'm a very awkward person.
I'm sorry?
Yeah,
Do you think you're an awkward person?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I mean, not at the moment.
Elephant!
No, but generally in social situations, I am a very awkward person. And anyone out there who's dealt with me over the years is going to be nodding vigorously right now.
But the funny thing is
I have social anxiety issues.
Okay, so you really remind me of the guy who is the person in real life of Jerry Krulik or the other. I can't get their names confused. But it's funny because, like, you're really funny on stage. So it's this strange dichotomy of, oh, there's this kind of awkward semen dude.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something wrong with me.
Yeah, probably.
there's something. The wires are crossed in a weird way somehow.
I think there's got to be something wrong with you to be a performer. How many, like, completely normal people are just like, I'm going to make a fool of myself on stage regularly?
Yeah. I mean, you know there's something else going on with me because, I mean, I've been in theater for, like I don't know, 20-plus years.
Are you coming out right now?
No. Saying that I'm not gay. I have never done drugs. I didn't even drink for the longest time.
I have trouble believing that.
No, I swear to God.
Okay.
Like, I didn't drink at all when I was in college.
Wow. Oh, you missed out on some awesome stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. That's debatable.
Unless you turned into, like, super maudlin guy when you were drunk.
No, I just didn't. I just wasn't doing it.
All right.
And yet, here I am. And I'm a fairly quiet person most of the time.
I honestly can't remember that anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Anybody that you talk to that I, like, work with, especially, be like, oh, Mike, he hardly ever says anything.
That's so... But you have that one coworker who comes to the sake meetups that you guys host, you and your wife.
Yeah.
So he must know now. He knows your dirty secret.
Well, he knows I'm a different person when I'm not at work.
Yeah, that's funny. Okay.
But anyway, all of this other stuff going on, here I am going up on stage... Apparently, I must like it or something.
Yeah.
So there's something, some weird thing going on that keeps me getting back up there.
I think you just have the actor's psychosis. This is what I've always thought of it as. I think it exhibits differently in every performer, but I think you have to have... And that's why I think improv is harder for women, as shitty as that is.
Ooh. Oh. Oh, we're opening that can of worms?
Because I'm a firm believer in this, and I think it's absolutely horrendous. Having a sociology background, being a feminist, having a single mom, so I know it's dangerous territory to toe this water, but I feel that it really sucks for women because socially, and maybe we're getting away from this. Maybe my generation, the next generation is getting away from it a bit, which is awesome. But I feel like it really sucks for women because historically, and that there is a malingering aspect of this, women were encouraged to not speak out as much, to not be the, you know, to not look foolish, even more so than men. And I think it's been much to the detriment of female performers for the longest time that you can have some outstanding female performers who, there was less of a support structure in place for that, to look silly on stage.
I got to agree, and I have to say, and I'm not going to name names because I'm going to forget about people, and I don't want to name a few people and not name other people.
I have names in my head too. I think it's safer to not name.
Yeah. but I have known some phenomenal women improvisers who are, among the best improvisers I have seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, be they male or female or whatever.
Bear.
Sure.
Part alligator.
Yeah. Any of that thing. Anything. Robot.
Whoa, better than robot?
I would put them up on that level.
Damn. Okay.
So, yeah. But, at the same time, they are clearly still in the minority.
Oh, absolutely.
But that's changing a lot. That's changing. Numbers are starting to get more evened out.
Starting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to get there, and I think it's going to get there while we're still performing, which I think is fantastic, but... You look at the...
But 10 years ago, I mean, you would be
You'd be lucky to get one chicken out of 10 guys in a troupe or something that with a rotating cast. Yeah. That's been an issue for the longest time. No, you're right. I mean, that's why I was so invigorated by Unleashed, you know, when you guys were first starting, because even was it 5-6 years ago now, getting started permanently instead of just doing that one show. Because you had an even split right at the beginning. I was like, this is...
Unleashed had a pretty good split for a long time.
Yeah, age and gender.
Still do.
Yeah. But so to take a step back, the actor psychosis thing, irregardless of, well, that's not a word, regardless of gender, right? Irregardless isn't a word and regardless is?
Regardless.
Right, but irregardless is not an actual word.
It might be, but I don't like it. I would prefer you not to use it.
Right, okay, so...
Speaking as an English major.
All right. Yeah, I was an English minor. Almost. I didn't get my minor. Regardless of gender, I feel like every actor has some degree of psychosis. I think mine's different than yours, but I have a psychosis as well. But at work and at play, I'm not that different.
Yes. So you're very out there. I mean, you put your personality out there.
I think I am out there.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, but it's different for me. So yes. Yeah, I think every performer has to have that degree of psychosis.
I'm like a performer who doesn't like the attention. I don't know. Something like that.
What about the end of a show? I feel like that's where we swap. I hate dealing with the audience after a show.
I think that's just really professionalism. It's not that I really want to go out and soak in applause or talk to people or anything.
No, I'm not saying that.
But I mean I think it's a professional thing to go out and, you know, thank you for coming out here and appreciate you coming to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Just being present and being appreciative of the audience.
I should be better at that. I've always had ever since college, I've had a problem because I'm so in my head about how the performance was.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. I mean, yeah. I'll be the same way, but then I just, you know, suck it up and go out.
And then after that, that's when you start.
Yeah.
And then we're all like, Mike, we already went through this, so now you need to get out of your head. the post-mortem we do.
Oh, it took me a while to get to that point. I mean, it took me a while to get to the, okay, just I'm just going to go out and smile and tell the people, and genuinely tell them, thank you for coming to the show. I appreciate you being the audience.
I really hope, someone listens to this and then goes to one of our shows, and they're like, it's okay. I know you're not really here right now. It was a good show.
If you say so. Thanks for coming out.
You like grip their hand. You do the two-handed handshake. You hold them there, and you're like, really? What about like about 2 minutes in?
No, I won't do that. You're scaring
people now. Potential audience. Well, I was gonna go, and their improv cast thing was funny, but then they talked about kill rooms and things they were doing to their audience members with two hands. And
that's just the water talking.
Yeah, I killed this water pretty quick.
What do we want to wrap up with?
Were we wrapping up right now?
Yes.
I would say...
Our hypothetical wrap-up.
I would say thank you for listening.
Yes. Really, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Because we know that any Tom, Dick, or Harry can put together a podcast.
And we just did.
And we just did with Smike's camcorder. Because with my thousands of dollars of computing equipment, I couldn't figure out how to get a podcasting studio set up in time. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We hope you enjoyed it. And let us know if you did. Or if you would like to see something or hear something in a future Provcast, let us know that as well on our Facebook page.
Yeah. And come see Buddies in Space live.
When we do a show.
Yeah. You can talk to us during the show.
Yeah. Now you know what we're thinking.
Yeah.
The whole time.
All of our secrets are exposed.
Wow. In one Provcast. That's kind of unfortunate. We should have kept some hidden. It's like a relationship where you play all your cards right off the bat.
Too late now. Scene.